Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Good morning, guys.
Hi there.
Morning.
How are you guys doing?
All yeah, right, dude. No complaints.
No complaints.
None whatsoever, dude.
Good.
Yeah.
How are you, Cole?
Yeah, no complaints, man.
Lovely. And G-Force?
I mean, I could complain about some stuff, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, choose not to complain.
Yeah.
That's like my philosophy in life.
Yeah.
I can complain, but I won't.
It's good.
Yeah, it's a choice.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in. Today is our guest episode, and we are very excited to have Sara Chitumbo-Hetira pop in. She's a filmmaker. She's a documentary filmmaker, and she has made a very exciting and interesting and important documentary that is screening as part of Encounters. It's called Black People Don't Get Depressed. Parts of it was even shot in the Bioscope.
Yeah, cool.
So we're very proud of it. We feel like it's kind of a little bit our movie.
Nice.
In a nice, exciting way. These very smartly done scenes were shot in the Bioscope as a device to help, you know, with the story. And it's going to be lovely to talk to her. I think, you know, there's such bigger worldly themes in her film. So we're going to get into that. And then here's someone that's just starting a beautiful, amazing career.
That's cool. Badass, dude. We need to give a high five to anyone that's making cool shit.
Right. No, and
also, like, I'm working on a documentary at work at the moment, a feature-length documentary.
Oh, cool.
It's my first, and it's hard. I'm the writer and researcher. It's very hard.
Mm. It is difficult.
So I have, like, obviously had respect for documentary filmmakers before, but doing it gives you a newfound appreciation for the people that are good at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or the people that are passionate about it and do it.
Yeah, you come at it from a very different place
than a
normal fiction filmmaker.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that.
Cool.
I think it's going to be a good chat. But let's just make a quick announcement for all those busy browsing the aisles right now.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that the Encounters Documentary Film Festival is here. These are documentaries from South Africa and around the world, and there are screenings in both Cape Town and Joburg. The Bioscope is proud to be one of the Joburg venues, and all the tickets are available on our website, thebioscope.co.za. Otherwise, head over to encounters.co.za.
I think let's waste no time.
Okay.
What are you guys going
to
do?
I have no idea. I haven't been here in such a long time, so I'm going to go find something to do.
You're going to familiarize yourself with how this shop works.
Again.
Well, listen, it is good to have you, Cole.
Right.
It's delightful to have your brain and your input whenever you are able to make it. So thanks for doing this shift with us.
Nice.
G-Force?
I'm going to go complain about some stuff.
Okay. You can complain to Cole.
Yeah, complain to me, bro.
All right. Okay, let's get into it. This is Sara popping in to rent something. How's it?
I'm good. I'm doing very good. I had a good night's rest at the end of a very busy week. I was in the edit suite for a very long time yesterday.
A good night's rest is always very important.
Exactly.
What are you editing?
I am editing the proof of concept for my next film, which is about a climate activist from Namibia. It's looking at the impact of the activism on her personal life. So it's not about all the amazing things she's done, but it's about what they've taken away and what it's meant in terms of her livelihood and how that's been threatened and how, you know, so that's
a documentary.
Yes, it's another docu.
But we're here today to talk about your film that you've obviously finished.
Yes.
That is going to, is it premiering at Encounters?
This is the African premiere.
The African premiere.
Yeah, we had the world premiere last month in New York at the African New York Film Festival, which was amazing.
Let's talk about that.
Yes, it was fantastic. It was in Harlem, number one.
Oh, that is cool.
Where you find people from all parts of the continent. So that was fascinating for me. And, you know, studying documentary in for my master's, we learned a lot about a guy called Albert Maysles. Okay. And it was actually at his documentary center that he started in Harlem. So for me, it was sort of like a 360 moment. Like, this is the guy whose films we studied.
Oh,
and
lovely.
Here I am premiering my first ever film at his center. So that was fantastic.
And you got to go?
I got to go, yes.
Okay. Was it your first time in New York?
No, it was my second time in New York.
It's such a lovely city. Eh?
My goodness. It's all consuming. And I did the touristy stuff. I wasn't shy.
You have to. You have to. It's what it's there for.
Yeah, we took the Staten Island Ferry. The only free thing you can do in New York is take the Staten Island Ferry. Everything else you pay a lot for.
Sure,
but
sure.
The ferry to Staten Island is free.
Yeah, you go past the statue. Hey?
Absolutely. Mm. We go past Lady Liberty, waved at her. So New York was fascinating. It was just also great to hear from other South Africans living there, and there's a lot of second generation Nigerian people living there. So I think they identified a lot with the themes of the movie, just around identity and migration and the impact it has on your psyche.
Let's get into what the movie is.
Yeah.
And so maybe I can just start, and then I really want to hear it from you. Obviously not from me, because I haven't seen it because it's yet to have its African premiere. But once a year, the Bioscope gets to host Encounters, which is a documentary film festival. And it's sometimes overwhelming because you get 20 or 30 films and you have to sort of quite quickly figure out which ones you want to come and watch. But people are very smart and people always figure them out. But for me as the cinema owner, obviously I it's quite hard to get into every single film. But yours immediately stuck out, and I remembered that you once came and shot some stuff at the Bioscope. So I want to get into that too, but your film is called Black People Don't Get Depressed.
Absolutely.
And I think out of a whole list of documentary titles, some of which are romantic names, some of which are quite clear, when you see a title like that, it gets your attention. And very similarly, when you came and shot some stuff at the Bioscope and you told me the name of the film, I was like, I get it. This is interesting. Yeah. So tell me about the film.
Absolutely. The film is really looking at personal experiences, primarily of creative people and handling their mental health issues. Black creatives, comedian, poet, as well as a writer, looking at their own journeys of what it was like to tell your family the stigma they experienced, and also how they've gone around coping with living with depression over the years. And it's also indirectly my own personal story around experiencing difficulties with my mental health and having to speak to my mom about it.
But what is the stigma?
The stigma is around it looking like you're not coping because you're weak.
Sure. But specifically, your comment is the fact that in Black culture, you can't have mental health or you can't be depressed. What is that? What do you, I mean, obviously, I want people to come and watch the movie.
Yes.
And the film will better perhaps explain it.
Yes.
But how did that come to you? How have you experienced that in your life?
Yes.
That prompted you to make a film?
So for me, it's been around not being able to run away from it anymore, because I'd have to, for a long time, hide the fact that I had depression, hide the fact that I'm seeing a psychologist, hide the fact that, you know, I've been prescribed meds, which I never took. You know, so it came from that point of I'm just tired of running away and pretending I'm okay.
But why did you feel you needed to pretend?
Because there's a lot of shame around being depressed in our communities, because it looks like you're weak or it looks like you're moping around and not being able to pull yourself together. And the other extreme that I realized speaking to a lot of other people is they were told that they either had to do a sort of like a cleansing, or it's almost like an exorcism, or you had to go to the bush and go twasa, basically appease your ancestors because this is what it is.
What is that term?
Uktwasa.
Okay.
So it means answering the calling of your ancestors.
Okay.
You know, so a lot of people, when you present with saying I'm having issues with my mental health or depression or, you know, these things, people usually say it's ancestors trying to call you so that if we do a cleansing or if you go and, you know, appease them and answer the calling, you'll be fine. And obviously people have found that that doesn't work. You know, so you come back to the city.
You don't want to criticize it because that there is something lovely about what that could be for you, right? It could actually give you something else. But it's interesting that you've got what seems to be like a very old sort of traditional way of looking at it, or someone going like, no, the whatever dopamine levels in your brain are out of balance and you need a boost serotonin or you need a whatever stabilizer.
Yeah.
It's like your ancestors don't have much to do with this. It's,
exactly.
It's about like chemicals
in
your head.
The chemical imbalances. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So I guess that's the logical and, you know, straightforward way of looking at it.
But I do love the idea that there is this, you know, call to go out and do that sort of stuff. But yeah, that can only take you so far, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I think there's ways in which some of the characters, I think, combined those two.
Yeah.
So I'm going to answer the calling. I'm going to appease my ancestors. And for me, it was looking for the ancestors to protect me and help me as opposed to... you know, this is
balancing
the
chemicals in
exactly.
your head. Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was very fascinating just being able to speak to different people about it, taking, you know, what we've talked about being the scientific things, but also the spiritual journeys that people take in terms of trying to figure it all out.
Yeah. How do you feel now?
I feel relieved. I feel liberated. And in a lot of ways, I feel like this had to be my first feature film because I don't think I would have been able to have courage or confidence to do anything else if I hadn't gotten this out of my system.
Okay.
Like I said, it's something that's almost been like haunting me to do.
Okay.
And now that I'm done with it, I feel so relieved.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, I feel so much lighter and I feel like my mind can actually, I have space in my mind for a lot of other things because it's been a process of processing, like actually figuring things out.
Yeah.
So I feel like this movie did me a favor in terms of my own confidence, in terms of my own courage to do other things in my life.
Yeah. I've often found sometimes when I'm overwhelmed and I, you know, do the things I need to do, clean my room, kind of literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
My brain feels cleaner. And it's obviously such a small part of the, you know, the grand scheme of mental health. But fuck, it goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think out of all the people, it was surprising to hear this from someone like Jim Carrey. But he said something like, of course, you know, psychiatrists and meds and things are important. But good people, good sleep, healthy exercise, good food goes a long way.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that you can't have this crazy wild life and expect your meds to work.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I love it. And I just love me getting a sense of societies and cultures that perhaps I'm not too privy to in my whiteness through the films that screen at the Bioscope.
Exactly.
So like... Akin Omotoso made a great film about wine in black culture where he then interviewed up-and-coming wine makers and also talking about the somewhat stigma that wine is more of like a white person's drink and here's black folk like getting more into wine. You know, so that was a fun film. That was called Color of Wine. But I just love us as a society looking at your film and going like, okay, I didn't know that was a thing.
Exactly.
Or if someone is experiencing it, they go, oh my God, this is a film for me.
Yeah.
I need to be around others that are going through it too.
Exactly. It's really forming community. And like I said, we had the world premiere last month in New York and our Q&A went on for about an hour. people wouldn't stop talking and sharing.
Okay, so what was it about? Was it sharing?
It was sharing. It was people saying, this is how I, this is what I've experienced. This is what I've seen. This is why it's important. I'd like to show this film at my school. I'd like to show this film to my family. Just, it's a conversation starter,
That's so lovely.
You know, so
Do you think we can then perhaps even host more screenings as the Bias Curve?
Absolutely. Definitely.
You know, we always use Encounters as a hunting ground for content that we then, you know, Encounters traditionally is always in June, in the middle of the year. So the second half of the year, we can take the best ones, especially the ones that are selling out, to do more. But we could perhaps even look at school screenings.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'd love that. I think.
Okay, so it's a film that could be all ages. Like school kids can watch it.
No, there's nothing. I mean, obviously there's a trigger warning at the beginning, but it's not PG and it's not it's nothing that anybody needs to be wary of.
Yeah. The trigger warning being that we're going to be talking about depression.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Lovely. You've just walked into the video store. So do you have anything that you're returning? What are you watching at the moment?
I am bringing back, what have I been watching? It's not a film.
Good. We're in the golden age of TV.
It is a series about your gut.
Okay.
It's about gut health, and they go into what you've just been talking about, like good food and what it does to your body and what it does to the chemicals in your brain. So I guess everything's usually sort of linked to what I'm going through.
I've seen it. So what is it called again?
It's on Netflix. Oh my God.
Something
your gut. I'll get the full name now.
And what have you gotten out of it?
Just about getting your, they keep calling them biomes, but I think it's just about the food that's good with
Hack your health.
Hack your health. Yes. Yeah. That's the one thing I was binging on last week.
No, it's lovely. And let me tell you, I'm now in my tail end of my 30s.
Yeah.
Fast approaching 40. You know, so like the body's not like functioning as well as it used to. And I also had some stomach issues and booked an appointment with like a gastro. But before that, started just taking some, what do you take? Probiotic.
Yes, yes.
And that sorted me out. And I was like, oh shit, it's gut health.
Exactly. And there's ways in which you can have a diet that helps with it already. So a lot of fermented foods, a lot of things, different, you know, getting like good bacteria from different things. Yeah. Your kombuchas and that kind of stuff.
We've tried to stock kombucha at the Bioscope. It's a hard one because it's
not for everyone.
It's not for everyone, and it's a live, living kind of drink.
Yeah,
a little bit like sort of craft beer, so they don't last long. And, they're expensive, but you know. It's an interesting world that we live in where kombucha's now a thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've enjoyed Hack Your Health.
Hack Your Health. I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of I like history remakes kind of stuff. So there's the Cleopatra series as well at the moment that I'm enjoying on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
There's also another series I've been watching. It's set in Australia and it's really about these two boys who are growing up with very dysfunctional mom and their stepdad, and now it's gone out of me. I was going to speak about it.
Okay.
I'll remember the name just now, but it's also on Netflix.
But speaking of Netflix shows that sort of help you with your life and understanding your body and your mental health, you could really enjoy the Netflix show about Blue Zones.
Oh yes, the Living 200 thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Yes. I haven't started, but I know that the Mediterranean is way up there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things where I remember hearing about this years ago that, you know, in these little islands in Sicily and, you know, parts of Greece and, you know, these people are all living well to 100, but happy. Not just living, but they're happy.
Exactly.
And when you go to Europe and you see those small little towns and you see everybody just talk shit in the middle of the town, they set up their chairs and they talk.
Yeah. Little Italian villages.
And they only go in when their like partner calls them because it's dinner time. But they've got friends. They've got people.
Exactly. They've got community.
They're talking. You know, what you experienced in your Q&A in Harlem. That's what they do every day.
Exactly.
They talk about their lives. They talk about what they're going to. They talk about their family. They bitch about politics.
Exactly.
So they get it all out their system and they talk. And then when they go home, they're having healthy pasta.
Yeah.
You know, with natural ingredients. They're drinking good wine.
Exactly.
They're not drinking, you know, Coke Zeros with all kinds of ingredients that you and I could never pronounce.
Exactly.
So, yeah, interesting. Okay, so let's. One thing I can rent you is this Live to 100 series on Netflix. We'll see whether there's other things.
I look forward to it. I look forward to watching it.
And what was Harlem like? Just one last sort of bit. What is...
It's so vibrant, man. Every second corner, there's someone with the big, like, ghetto blaster playing music, tiny little Japanese restaurants, food from all over the world. Like, you can go around the corner, there's jerk chicken, and around the other corner, there's, like, the Japanese, like I said.
Yeah.
But just really vibrant. People on the streets, like, you know, you don't get that sense of feeling for your personal safety like you would feel, like, in the center of Joburg, but everyone's on the streets.
I don't know whether there's to Harlem specifically, but, I experienced Queens, Bronx. I did a little bit of Spanish Harlem.
Okay.
And you'll appreciate...
La Maqueta.
What's that?
La Maqueta is like the little big market with all the food stores in Spanish Harlem.
I missed that. Yeah. A friend of mine lived in Spanish Harlem and she said she heard a real estate agent call it Spaha. And she was like, no.
No.
She's like, we're not doing that.
Gentrifying Spanish Harlem. Yeah. Spaha. Yeah.
She's like, that's not what we're going to call it. Because, you know, that's what Soho is. The road is Houston Road, which kind of dissects a part of that area.
The borough,
And so it's south of Houston.
Oh, my
Soho.
Goodness. Same as Tribeca
from.
Is the, it's the meeting. What is Tribeca? Let me Google it.
And Dumbo.
Yes,
did you go to Dumbo?
Down under Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass.
Goodness. I know Tribeca is also a...
the tribe. It's obviously three areas
it's three,
or something.
Anyway.
But you, where did we grow up?
I grew up in the Northwest Province, Mafikeng and Rustenburg.
Okay.
So very small town, even up to now. We're a little forgotten town. Everybody moves to Joburg after high school and nobody really goes back. But it was also like towards the end of apartheid. So it was the Mangope era.
Okay.
Where I grew up, we didn't have to do Afrikaans in school.
Interesting.
Only like when we became South Africa, they introduced like Afrikaans to our primary schools and we were like, what is this language that we didn't have to do growing up, you know?
Okay.
So it was really good upbringing. I remember being very, very young when Sarafina came out. That was one of the first movies I saw on the big screen.
Okay.
And I remember big velvet curtains in our tiny... It must have been the size of the bioscope. Could be even smaller, but it was called... The mall is called Mega City.
Yeah.
And I remember just walking into the movie and there's this... It's like so vivid, like the carpets. It's like carpeting, like velvet carpeting all on the walls and then this thick... red or maroon
curtains
were on the screen and would literally open. It wasn't just on the side. They would open and the movie would start. So growing up in Bophuthatswana was a lot of fun.
I was about to say, because that's what that area was called.
Yes.
Bophuthatswana, which for those who don't remember, because it's amazing how history can change, that was its own country.
Yes.
It was a...
What they call the Bantu
stunts. The Bantu stunts, which was like this kind of independent little country within South Africa that sort of had its own rules, its
exactly.
own
Exactly. We had our own flag, our own national anthem.
Yeah, you had BOP TV.
BOP TV, Radio BOP. We had the Mabana centers. Art and culture was a huge thing. So, I mean, like I'm saying, we used to go to the movies. We used to go to the theater. So there was a lot going on that we had a lot to be proud of.
And you didn't feel apartheid on your neck, on your head?
Not until I went to Rustenburg, which was my high school, when, you know, you're now going and you're being told you have to do Afrikaans. And I'm like, I have no idea where to start, you know. Afrikaans, onvoorbereide praat.
But so not a lot of white folk in Bophuthatswana?
There were a lot of farmers.
Okay.
Still are. So there was a lot of white Afrikaans farmers, but you didn't necessarily feel, because the government in place is black like you, there's no one who was going to be treating you other.
It's interesting, huh?
You know?
So it's safe to say that Sarafina is then your puppy love film.
It is. Okay. It is. I mean, it's so vivid still in my mind. I can see Leleti Khumalo, Whoopi Goldberg all smiling.
Singing.
You know, exactly, dancing, singing. So lovely. That was one of the big movies in high school. In primary school, I don't really have a big remember, but there was Back to the Future.
So sorry, Sarafina was more high school then?
End of primary school.
Okay, so then that's still your puppy love.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're in Rustenburg. And now we're in high school. What do you think your high school film could be? It's your high school crush. Sometimes it's usually a film a little more boundary pushing, maybe a little bit more adult.
Let me try to remember. What did we watch in high school?
Were you saying Back to the Future? Which is obviously that would have come out a lot earlier. But
yes,
did you maybe discover
yes.
it in high school?
I think I discovered it in high school. And I think it's my mom who put it on. Actually, I remember what it is now. Top Gun.
Okay.
No, but that's more primary school as well.
Okay.
Top Gun had a big influence on me as well. Okay. Because my mom, most of the things, it's because my mom played them.
And
I would watch them.
Okay.
You know, so.
What did mom do for a living?
My mom's still a librarian. So she worked at the University of Bophuthatswana, which became UNIBO, which is now the University of the Northwest.
Okay.
And so.
Is that what's in Potch?
No. Yes. They have campuses in Potch and in Mafikeng.
Okay.
So that's what she did. My mom was a librarian, so I grew up with books and films.
Yeah.
Primarily, and television.
Was Mafikeng in Bophuthatswana?
Yes, Mafikeng was the capital city. So it has two names. It's Mafikeng and Mabatu.
Okay.
So there was always
What's the difference between Mafikeng and Mafikeng? Is that just...
It's so the English, when they came, it was easier for them to put F's. So you see a lot of things we've changed back.
Translation.
Yeah, so we've changed it back now to Mahikeng.
To Mahikeng. That's much better. Yeah.
So it's called Mahikeng. So Mahikeng / Mabatu was the capital city of Bophuthatswana.
Okay.
Yeah, so my mom was a librarian.
I had cousins that lived in Mafikeng at one point. Mahikeng, sorry. look at my ingrained whiteness. Okay, so then did you have to travel to Rustenburg to study at high school?
So I was in boarding school, holidays, go back to Mahikeng.
And what school was that?
It's called Grenville High School.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there. Co-ed.
Okay.
Co-ed, yeah. Obviously, we had separate lodgings and stuff, but it was a co-ed school. It was a good school. It was lots of good years. I did a lot of drama. I did a lot of what they used to call home economics now. I think they call it, I don't know what they call it now, but just learning to bake and make things with your hands and stuff. And the male equivalent was woodwork.
Yeah. Ours was called technical drawing or industrial something.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget one guy going, I don't want to learn how to woodwork. And he's like, I want to be a chef. Can I do home economics? He was the one boy that did it. It's so funny that they didn't even give us a choice.
Exactly. It's like all these gender roles.
Hey, don't you think that's crazy? Like all the girls just have to do home economics.
Yeah.
But it's like, what about all the guys that want to be chefs? And all the girls that want to, you know, do architecture or, you know, carpentry.
Exactly.
It's funny.
And another movie that came out towards the end of high school, I think, was Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, Lordy.
My goodness, did that just...
Yeah. That's a shell cracker of a film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which just freaks you out about drugs. So it's good. Exactly. It's good to watch that in high school.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good old Jared Leto, film by Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah. And what's the lady's name with the dark hair?
Jennifer Connelly. You don't quite ever see her the same.
No.
After that movie.
Yeah.
And after a particular scene, which if you've seen it, you won't ever forget.
Yeah. But she's also in Top Gun. Strangely enough, that you're talking about films from back then, her face keeps coming up.
In Top Gun Maverick.
Yes.
Aging like a fine wine.
Very much so.
She's beautiful.
I enjoyed the new Top Gun
as well. It was lovely. What a glorious, well-made, solid movie.
I like to say I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, but I do enjoy his films. Even the Mission Impossible series I enjoyed, actually.
Yeah,
so.
No, they got some smartness to them and they got some things. They shot the next one, which we haven't seen yet, they shot a chunk of it in South Africa.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah, and, okay. And they do their best to try and keep it out of the media because they don't ever want people sort of swarming them. But they were in, you know, like Heidelberg or like some godforsaken
parts of South Africa. There's that guy who could double as Tom Cruise who Superbalist has... No, no, it's Checkers 360. Just yeah, Google.
They got the guy that looks like
him. Yeah, so maybe he did the doubles when we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, when you were in high school, did we see some... seeds of filmmaking come through, or were you still interested in other things?
In high school, not yet. I think I was more into writing and poetry in high school. English was my favorite. English and history were the subjects that I excelled at.
Yeah, because I think that, is it safe to say that you're not too interested in narrative films? You wanting to make documentaries, hey?
That's what I've studied and that's what I've been interested in just because of the way my mind works. I'm very curious about what's happening in the world and how to make sense of it. I always have been. I've always been very curious.
Yeah. I feel like documentary filmmaking is a device to get those kinds of things out.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily dream of Tarantino and Scorsese. Yeah. You're seeing the world more... through the eyes of like a journalist or like a detective.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wanted to be a journalist, and there's still somewhere in the back of my mind I feel like I still need to at least anchor some sort of current affairs show at some point. So that's something I'd like to go into. I'm interested in fiction. I'm actually, after I finish, because my other documentary that I'm doing on climate justice is a short. And yeah. I started having a lot of like narrative fiction ideas as well. Okay. And I think while I was making my full-length documentary, I was just like, I need to escape all this reality. I need to escape all this reality. And, you know, okay. I'm interested in... experimenting with it, but usually the first thing I go to is a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we study after high school?
I studied, yes.
Yeah,
after
you said
high
you went
school,
to.
I did my bachelor's in media studies and performing arts, so drama and journalism, basically. I started here at WITS, okay. But then my mom moved to Namibia, actually.
Okay.
So I went and finished off the rest of my university because she was teaching there as well. She was doing, she was in the library and teaching information science there. So I spent 4 years of my undergrad in Namibia. Then I came back here and worked in television. At ETV.
What's the university
It's the University of Namibia. It's in Windhoek, Namibia.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that, then I came to ETV where I worked for 2 years and I got a scholarship to go and study my documentary in England. So I did 2 years of a master's at Sussex University in Brighton in the UK. So I studied and that's where they were talking to us about Maisels and teaching us all these films and, you know, cinema verite, etc. So yeah, I studied film up to master's level now.
What was a film that came to you in that Brighton master's
time?
Because that's the, you know, we've got the third love, which is the It's Getting Serious, which is, you know, at that point in your life, relationships are more grown
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
You know, they are more solid.
Yeah.
You know, this is when a partner might move in or you might move into their place. So the film that comes to you at that time is usually one that is perhaps a bit more serious.
Yeah.
And not serious in tone, but it's just like, you sink your teeth into it more because you're now studying film. You know, was there something that they perhaps showed you in that course? Like perhaps a particular documentary? I'd imagine you just watched a lot of
documentaries. That's all we did. They showed us a film called Man on Wire.
Yes. How remarkable is that movie?
My goodness. And I think the new version of that is Free Solo.
No, it's not called Free Solo.
Sorry, not Free. What's his name?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in the biopic of it.
Yes.
So they then turned it into a narrative. But what it is, and I forget what that's called.
Yes.
It didn't do necessarily that well. The best is Man on Wire.
Man, yes.
Nobody needs to watch the Joseph Gordon-Levitt version because Man on Wire, okay. The film is about the real life, the documentary, of the man who, quite early on in the days when the World Trade Center was built, so this happened in the 80s, the 70s or the 80s, this French high wire performer broke into the World Trade Center and on a misty morning was able to walk on a tightrope between the World Trade Center buildings. And he is a very charismatic Frenchman. Philippe is his name. And so the documentary uses a film, not only the footage of when they did it, but they recreate these scenes to help give you footage to watch during the documentary when they're explaining how they broke in, how they went upstairs, how they had to hide from the cops and the police, and how they managed to pull this thing off. So it actually became a bit of a narrative film at the same time.
Exactly.
It actually became this kind of biopic.
Exactly.
It just
You are walking up there with him. You are feeling the vertigo. You are like this. I mean,
It's remarkable.
Know, it's and, really, really well done.
And did you go to the 9/11 site?
I went to the memorial site, yes.
And did you do what I did?
What did you do?
So the 9/11 memorial now in New York is the foundations of the two buildings. So obviously instead of, you know, these two towers that then towered above, they've sunken them in.
Yeah.
And the exact perimeter of these two buildings is now this kind of big fountain walk around. So you can see the one and then you notice how close the other one was, because these two buildings were quite close to each other.
Yeah.
So close that a guy could walk on a tightrope between them. Did you see that distance and go, oh my God, this is the distance the guy walked?
I actually didn't make the connection.
I didn't. I went to, when I was last in New York, we did it. I think it was in 2019.
Yeah.
And I sort of put myself in the corner and was like, this is the route the guy took.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll do that next time.
It's so good. It's such a great movie. Okay, so Man on Wire.
Man on Wire stands out as something that they showed us. There's also another one called Grey Gardens, which was by Albert and David Maisels, the two brothers I'm talking about. And they're basically looking at the lives of these two aristocrats who were related distantly to Jackie Kennedy Onassis.
Okay.
And it's basically how they've lost all their stuff, but they still live in this massive house which they can't maintain.
Yeah.
They're walking around washing the dishes in like mink coats.
Oh,
and it's just these fascinating old ladies with very old world ideas in a world that's very much changed, but they're still living as if, you know, so that's another one that stands out.
That's one thing that I think is interesting, especially because you've spent some time in England. There's a large number of people who have titles, who are the Duke of whatever's, and they can't afford to keep their castles going. Just because come from that line, just because you have a castle in your name, doesn't mean you can upkeep a castle. Do you know how fucking expensive it is to keep a castle maintained?
Exactly.
You know, it's big, it's old, it gets cold, you know.
It's like living in a museum, actually.
Yeah, it's wild. So it's interesting that you don't necessarily have money if you have this title and a castle. It doesn't necessarily mean you have money. Okay, that's an interesting... Grey Gardens.
Yeah, Grey Gardens.
Is that to sort of describe the gardens that sort of haven't been maintained?
Basically.
Interesting.
Basically.
That's
cool. Hey. So that's fascinating. And then...
What got you to the UK? You said there was a...
I got a scholarship.
A scholarship, okay.
It used to be called the Foreign Commonwealth Office here, but now I think it just goes through the British Council.
Okay.
And they have... I mean, it still goes on. It's called the Chevening Scholarship.
Okay.
It still goes on every year. They select a certain number of people from different Commonwealth countries.
Yeah.
And you get to go. So it was quite a process to get in. It was a lot of interviews back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, you had to do some proofs of concept to really convince them. And like I said, I think it was three rounds of interviews. So I got to study there for 2 years and it was amazing. I made some amazing friends. I've been back up to England quite a few times. My friends have been down here to visit. Yeah. Some of them came for my wedding last year.
Lovely.
So it was a very nice time. And just like in the countryside, next to this little village called Lewes.
Okay.
Where, what's his name? What's his name? Guy Fawkes?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, they have this Guy Fawkes parade every year because apparently this is where he came from or something.
Okay.
This guy. But yeah, it's just beautiful surroundings, beautiful gardens, you're next to a forest, you're next to a small village, and then you go like a few kilometers, about 10 kilometers, then you're on the Pebble Beach. So it's quite nice. Yeah.
Lovely. Very man. Nice. Had you been overseas at that point? Were you able to travel?
We were able to travel quite a bit because when you're in England, there's like
EasyJet.
But I'm
saying before England. Had you managed to get to Europe or the States? Was that the first time you'd gone?
No, I had managed to get to Germany. I was dating a German guy, so I went to see his dad in Germany.
That's cool.
So Berlin was one of my first trips overseas ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it is privilege.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to go overseas, but I just wish it on everyone.
Yeah.
You know, especially the people that are creative storytellers, because it just cracks open your brain.
Absolutely.
And when you're in a city like New York,
absolutely,
it really is just incredible. It's so overwhelming, but in the best and most exciting way.
Totally
agree.
Where
you realize there is a world bigger than you. And, you know, just to perhaps go back to mental health, one of the biggest problems, especially as shown by that Q&A, is that people think that they're in their own world. Mm-hmm. They think there's no other option. They think they can't find a way out.
Yeah.
And being able to walk through the streets of New York when you are surrounded, especially in such a pedestrian city, you get the sense of what however many million other people feel like.
Absolutely.
And you just get the sense, and perhaps the opposite can then happen. You can then feel that you are just one of just so many.
Yeah.
But if you do feel alone, being able to travel overseas just has you realize just how much of a bigger world there is out there.
There's so
much. How many options are there for you?
Absolutely. Just in terms of history, in terms of the different kinds of people you see in New York. I mean, it's just almost like an assault on the senses, the smells, the sounds.
Yeah.
You know, it's really fascinating, and the stories everywhere. You see you see life happening on so many different levels all around you all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're an observant person, and like you're saying, for a creative person, it does wonders for your mind. Like, you're always taking notes, you're always thinking and observing things that, you know, you make associations and, you know, develop other ideas about.
Our last film is the film you could settle down with.
The film I could settle down with.
Like a sort of all-time favorite.
My goodness.
You know, it's a comfort blanket. It's just the one that sort of comes to you first, in a sense. It doesn't have to necessarily be one you've watched many times. It's just, you know, that perhaps one that kind of steered a course.
It's actually a recent film that I actually saw it on the plane.
Okay.
It's called American Fiction.
Okay. It was recently nominated.
Yes.
It was one of the Oscar films.
Yes, and I know there was a lot of buzz about it, but I wouldn't have known how to, and I see now it's on Amazon.
Well, it didn't really come to South Africa because it's somewhat of an American story, but it isn't. It's really a conversation around blackness.
Absolutely.
What is the, we call it the back of the box, which is what it's about.
Yeah.
Can you describe what it's about?
So this guy is stuck in academia, but he goes to, you know, where he's from for a book. What's the inciting incident?
Well, maybe I can explain it.
Yeah, maybe you're better at this than me.
He's an author.
Yes.
And he writes books, but he's a black guy.
Yeah.
I forget the actor's name. You'll recognize him immediately.
He's the same director as well.
Yeah.
And
there's this great moment. I haven't seen the film, but I could tell from the trailer, the plot, where his publisher says, you know, it's not going to do well, or we can't publish it because it's not black enough.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the fuck does that mean? I am black. How can it not be black enough?
Yeah.
And so what he does is he creates a story.
Yes.
That is... He pretends that's his life, right? He pretends that it's an autobiographical story. But he sort of ups the blackness of it. And that becomes a success.
Exactly. Because that's what's been, when you look at the trends of what's becoming popular and what's selling and what becomes a bestseller, that's what, you know, it's this reductionist view of blackness.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the violence, it's about gun-toting, it's about all these things, which he is not. He's quite an intellectual man.
Yeah.
You know, so the book that he writes that's not even anything to do with his own life story is what becomes... popular, and you know, but at the same time, he's also mourning his mom going into, you know, she's losing her mind.
Okay,
and,
is that what's
you know,
happening in
yeah,
the background? Yeah, the
yes,
more
and
the
he
more
loses
layers.
His sister as well. So it's about that, and it's also about falling in love, but also just what is the experience of blackness that is accepted versus who he actually really is.
Yeah, because he has to sort of keep up this act.
Yeah, until the very end.
As he does the sort of book tour,
yes.
and he's got to keep up the lies.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But
so I just found that fascinating, like just being about the constant sort of struggle of, you know, it's not just code switching, but literally having to ask yourself if you're black enough because you don't. You know,
and what does that even mean? Yeah.
You know, so I really, really, really enjoyed that. And it's just very cleverly done in terms of the way they hold back information, and you sort of like it becomes revealed to you as the film is going. And I just enjoy something that makes me think as well.
It was applauded as being one of the funniest of the nominees. Of all the Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
It sadly didn't, I don't think it won much at the Oscars this year, but it was nominated for a bunch.
Exactly. Another film I love, and it's the two, they came out like a few years ago, both of them at the same time. I remember the whole fiasco around Moonlight and La La Land.
I love
both of those movies so much
for
many
great.
Different reasons. La La Land, just because, you know, the entire backdrop is about the film and the film industry and being
Hollywood.
Part of that. Exactly. Yeah. So those are two other films that I can watch at any time. I can watch La La Land anytime. I can watch Moonlight at any time.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, great. But I think American Fiction is one of those films that might get a little lost. It certainly did at the Oscars. But you say it's somewhere now. It's on Amazon, you
said? It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I got back home and I checked, one of my friends had logged into our TV with them. I'm like, oh, we've got Amazon. Oh, okay. So it's there.
Lovely.
So yeah. Flipping through, I saw that it's there.
Lovely. But listen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We appreciate having you. I'm going to rent you the Journey to 100 or...
Thank you. Yes, that
something,
one.
Something to 100.
Blue Zones.
Yeah, the Blue Zones. If you type in Blue Zones on Netflix, you'll get it. It's a great thing. I mean, we can all learn from it.
Yeah.
But we're excited to screen your film soon at Encounters. And it's just... Yeah, well, you shot stuff here.
Yes,
that features in the film.
Absolutely.
What's going to be in the movie that was shot in the cinema?
That's going to be such a 360 moment coming back here, because one of our key characters, like I said, we spoke to creatives, is a comedian called Ebenezer Dibagwane.
Yes. No, we've had him perform at the Bioscope many times.
Exactly. So we came and filmed sort of like the inserts, because it's such a serious topic.
Yeah.
We wanted to have some skits. Just act as chapter breaks in the film.
That's right. I remember. I've got a memory of you coming, shooting stuff, but of course I wasn't in the room.
Exactly.
Let you just
So we had
shoot.
An audience here, and he filmed some of the material, which acts as sort of, it's almost like little...
like little things in between, like little moments of
reprieve.
Yeah.
Basically. So we filmed some in the actual theater of him doing some stand-up routine, and we filmed at your bar where he does this routine between a barman and himself back and forth about why he's drinking so much, which is obviously to do with the issue that he's got a lot of mental difficulties and not struggling with depression. So I'm going to be so happy to view those on the big screen in the Bioscope.
In the room that it was shot in. Lovely. Well, I'm so glad that I could be a part of this. I think it's an important film. It's a lovely film. And like many documentaries, it can just live on and hopefully help people and just help the conversation. We always say, let's have a conversation. And you always go, how the fuck do we have the conversation? It's like, it's this. This is one of the ways. You come to this film... when it eventually gets to more screenings, hopefully we can share those. If it eventually becomes available in a place, we'll share that. But congratulations.
Thank you so much, Russell, and looking forward to coming to the Bioscope.
Lovely. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Lekker chat.
Mm.
Like a person. Tickets for Encounters are on sale at encounters.co.za.
Link in the description.
Yeah, link in the description. At the time recording this, I think we had like one or two tickets left for Sara's film. It's no doubt going to be sold out.
Cool.
But what is lovely is that the Bioscope always picks these kinds of films and does screenings of them afterwards.
Cool.
So we will certainly find a way to have more screenings of Sara's film.
Nice.
And I think it's also just part of a much bigger thing and discussion. So it's going to be cool to see how this film just lives out in the world.
Awesome.
So yeah, thank you guys. Thanks for listening. And we've got previous episodes over at thevideostore.co.za. We've interviewed a lot of filmmakers, and it's lovely to always talk through the process and what they're going through. So yeah, please go into the filmmaker category, and you can see all the other filmmakers we've discussed.
Nice.
And had chats with. But yeah, we'll see you guys again next week.
Yeah.
See you then, guys.
All right. Lekker.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ta-ta.